Well, good evening.
It is so good to have this opportunity tonight. I am excited about it. I've been looking forward to being able to tell you guys all about the work in Tanzania. And we appreciate so much the congregation here, the way you have welcomed us and embraced us. And you're a part of this work. And maybe some of you don't even know much about this work. So I'm glad to have the opportunity to tell you what's going on in Tanzania and what you as the South Green Street Church are a part of in what's taking place there. So I want to begin explaining why we need mission work in Africa. You might be thinking, well, you know, there's a lot of mission work has been done in Africa in the past. You know, maybe we already support a guy in, I don't know, Nigeria or South Africa or Zimbabwe or various other African countries. You know, why is there a need for so many missionaries in Africa? Well, part of the reason there's such a need is Africa is a whole lot bigger than most people realize that it is. And so to illustrate that, one way we can look at it is to compare. If you were to drive from Miami, Florida, 4,835 miles all the way to North Pole, Alaska, that would take you 77 hours of straight drive time, a lot of energy drinks, you know, a lot of energy shots and stuff like that. And that's how long that would take you. Similarly, if you were to drive from Cape Town, South Africa, all the way up to the top of Africa in Cairo, Egypt, it would take you 6,276 miles and 159 hours, more than twice as much windshield time, driving all the way up Africa as it would driving diagonally across North America. Another way to illustrate how big Africa is if you were now, to avoid confusion, this is not a map of the actual countries in Africa. But it does show you that on the landmass that is Africa, the 11.7 million square miles, that is the continent of Africa, you could fit China and the United States and India, most of Europe, Japan, all could fit within that landmass. It's a vast, vast area. Now, when you look at it on a flat map, you don't get that sense because flat maps distort the things away from the equator and kind of minimize the things toward the equator. So look at an actual globe and you get a better sense for how huge the area is. Let's think about Tanzania specifically. That's where our work is. It's an East African nation just south of Kenya. There are so many things that I think of as being quintessentially African that are there in Tanzania. And while I talk about it, I'll show you this overlay of Tanzania placed on top of the southeastern United States so you get a better sense of the scale of what we're talking about. It's a slightly larger than twice the size of the state of California, if that helps at all. But Tanzania is the home of Mount Kilimanjaro, which is the tallest freestanding mountain in the world, the tallest mountain in Africa. It's bordered by Lake Tanganyika, which is the deepest lake in Africa, which is appropriate because mission work is full of highs and lows. And there is the highest and lowest points in all of Africa right there in Tanzania. It's also bordered by Lake Victoria, which is the largest lake in Africa, second largest freshwater lake in the whole world. It's where the Serengeti is. How many of you have seen the movie The Lion King? Have you seen that? Yeah, that was animated right there. No, it wasn't. But it could have been. That's what Tanzania looks like as far as the landscape goes. That's where the Serengeti is. That's the type of wildlife that lives there and all that sort of thing. And so as we think then about Tanzania, it's the people that are the real attraction. The people that live there. And the population is absolutely exploding. Across all of Africa, it is. In the world today, one out of every six people live in Africa. One out of every six people. But the population there is growing like nowhere else. The reason for that is the mortality rate has always been higher there than anywhere else. So nowhere has more to gain from the proliferation of modern medicine than does Africa. And it's making an impact Those death rates are dwindling, but the birth rate is staying comparably high. And what all that means is that today in Africa, for every one person that dies, there are four people being born. So with that type of ratio, you're talking about an exploding population. So it's predicted that by the end of this century, that one out of every three people on earth will live in Africa. The Tanzania will be the eighth most populous nation in the world, and that its largest city, Dar es Salaam, will be the third largest city in the whole world by the end of this century. So your kids probably will see that happen if projections continue the way that they are. That means we got a golden window of opportunity where they are still very receptive to the gospel and have not become financially abundant that though that window has closed and they've begun to be resistant to it. And where we can still get in ahead of this curve, and every conversion that we make now becomes, they have four kids. Think about the exploding population in the church that also can happen in that area. So the question is, what are we doing to try to reach these wonderful people of Tanzania? Our mission is fourfold. And I didn't make this clear on the front end, but I should have. My role with this is I direct the work, and I coordinate the school of preaching there. I'm responsible for raising funds for the work. I'm responsible for coordinating a lot of activities. And just late last night, I was messaging with Tanzanians. This afternoon, I was corresponding with Tanzanians about work that is taking place there, needs that they have, and all that sort of thing. Well, a big part of what we do is preacher training. That's actually absolutely vital if the work is going to have long-term sustainability in any area of the country. There's got to be a way that you're training local men to do local leadership positions, local men that are going to be able to teach others also and to then propagate the church. They're going to be able to be much more successful than missionaries are. They're not going to have language barriers. They're not going to have cultural barriers or anything like that. They're not going to have families at home in America that are wanting them to come home. They're going to spend all their lives right there working. So if we can equip them to do that work as effectively as possible and then get out of their way, they're going to be able to do some great, great things. And it's a biblical pattern. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2. The things that you've heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. That's exactly what we're trying to do. So enter the Andrew Connolly School of Preaching. Named after Andrew Connolly, who was a spiritual giant and a pioneer in mission work back in the 60s in Tanzania when it was still known as Tanganyika. And Andrew Connolly and his wife forged that mission work. They recruited Cy and Stephanie Stafford. Andrew Connolly is the gentleman in the top corner. Cy Stafford is the gentleman in the lower corner. Andrew recruited Cy to join him in the work there. And Cy then took that vision and then training that he learned from Andrew, and he focused his work in the northern part of Tanzania. Now, at the very same time that Cy was being recruited, Andrew also recruited my parents to join in the mission work there. We were set to go over at the same time, be a part of the same team. It happened that my mom found that she had cancer. We had to cancel those plans and stay and get medical treatment for that. So we didn't get to be a part of the team at that time, but we would later on in life. And I'll circle back around to that as well. So Cy then, in 2001, started the Andrew Connolly School of Preaching in Arusha, Tanzania, with the goal of training East Africans to do the work of evangelists. And that's been incredibly successful. Since 2013, when we first got involved with the work, we helped to train. The Andrew Connolly School of Preaching has trained 78 preachers. We had 20 graduates just this last year. Men not only from Tanzania, but men that are coming to us from Kenya, from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, from Ethiopia, from South Sudan, from Uganda, from all in all about six different East African nations are being touched by our school of preaching and our graduates there. Not only that, but one of our graduates saw there was a need for a school of preaching in Kenya. So he started the Kenya School of Preaching. And two of our graduates are helping to operate a school of preaching that's just opened this past year in Dar es Salaam. And so not only do you have the work that these guys are doing in local churches, but they're starting schools of preaching also. And you get this pyramid of good. We're never going to know this side of heaven, all the good that's done through this mission point. And that's exciting to me to think about that those ripples of good that are done through this type of mission. And so where we fit in, I mentioned we had that interest started back when Si first went over there. I would have been in eighth grade at the time, so that was a few weeks ago. Now, why are y'all chuckling? It hurt my feelings. Now, that's been quite a while ago. When I was in college at Freed Hardeman in 2000, there was a trip that was going to a campaign trip. Don't go on a foreign campaign trip unless you're ready for your life to be changed, because it does that to you, as some of you may well know. I know we've got some campaigners that are active members here. So I decided to go on that campaign back in 2000. We were interested in the work. We're impressed by the work, the country, the people, the mission method, and all of it. We wanted to be involved with it on a full-time basis one day, but decided that, you know, then was not the time. We had just gotten married. There were other things, and we wanted to get life started in other ways. It was not a convenient time for us to move to Africa. We would wait and do it at a more convenient time. And then, you know what happened? Life didn't get any more convenient. In fact, it continued to get less convenient. So we decided eventually, if we were ever going to move to Africa, we were going to have to pick an inconvenient time and do so. And so that's what we did. We picked an inconvenient time, we moved to Africa, and we spent 3 years there working with the school and were a part of the mission work there. And we came back to fulfill some commitments that we'd made here, and then we're getting involved again starting last year full-time in being involved with the work, kind of splitting our time, taking a lot of trips and being a part of there. But that's where we lived when we were living there permanently. Then in 2017, our brother Si, who was the director of the work, passed from this life into eternity. He was a great man who was missed by many, and his impact on the church is absolutely incalculable. He made such a huge, huge impact on Tanzania and the church there. He was a dear friend of mine. He was a mentor. He was the one that recruited me and my family into working in Tanzania and living there, and it forever changed our lives. Well, he asked me in 2015 if I would be willing to be his eventual successor in directing the work. I was not interested at that time. There were other things I wanted to do, but as God has taught me over the years, you know, waiting to do other things isn't always what needs to be done. I'm supposed to be involved in this work. And so that's, like I described, last year we have re-engaged full-time, taking over Si's role of directing and coordinating the work. But this is the team that makes it work. These are the guys that I depend on. They depend on me. These are the leadership of the school, starting from left to right. There's Augustine. He works with directing our farm. There's Ahimadiwe. He's the one the local director of the school. There's Charles. He's the director of logistics, and he's our government liaison. Helps make sure that we're right with the government of where we need to be. So if one day I don't come back from a trip and I send a message saying I've been thrown into prison, it's Charles's fault because he didn't do something right. He's going to be the guy. But these guys are tremendous men. And they are my eyes and hands and ears and all kinds of stuff working there when I'm over here. And likewise, they're depending on me to raise money for the work, to provide for what it needs, for them and their families and what they need, and so many important things. So I want to make sure you see their faces. The second aspect of the work is personal evangelism. Preacher training and personal evangelism, which goes hand in hand. That's what we're commissioned to do. We're called to go into all the world, right? We're supposed to be going and making disciples. And The church in that area is flourishing in that way. Last year, the churches in Arusha reported 216 lost souls that were baptized into Christ. 167 erring members were restored, and three whole congregations were restored to the Lord just last year in northern Tanzania. But rather than drown you with stats, what I want to do is illustrate how evangelism works in the mission field by telling you the story of the church in one area of western Tanzania. Here is the first Christian in this particular area was a man named Pascal. Now, I don't have Pascal's picture, but he came in June of 2006. He was an immature Christian himself. He was not a preaching student. He was not a professional evangelist in some way. He wasn't any of those things, but he had some tracts, and he knew and believed in Jesus. And he shared those tracts with this man's family. This is Sylvester Bahati. And his seven members of this family believed and obeyed and began to worship under this very fig tree. And so the church at Imlamagigo, there'll be a test later, at Imlamagigo began right here. Now, today, this is where they worship. And this is my daughter Abby, you'll recognize her, on our most recent trip visiting with the church here. Well, in that same year of 2006, October, Cy Stafford sent a team from Arusha to visit this congregation to help them. The team included a missionary, John Hall. It included some experienced African evangelist, Francis Wacheza. Also, Charles and Himidiwe that you met a moment ago were part of that. And one of our preaching students, a man named Youssef, were part of this team that went and conducted a campaign to help out this congregation. Well, that campaign, that seminar, resulted in 11 conversions from a nearby city by the name of Usharambo. All right, well, this is Youssef today. And this is the church building where the Usharambo church now meets. Now, it's kind of the largest congregation in that area of Tanzania. And this is Abby with the children at that congregation where she was teaching some children's Bible classes. I'll get to her project later on in the presentation, but I wanted you to see the children that were a part of that congregation that came about from this campaign. Well, during Christmas break, Cy Stafford sent Youssef back to help Pascal in evangelism in and around Usharambo, with the result that 16 more people were converted. And after graduation in April, Youssef moved to work full-time with the church in that area and help teach Pascal more fully, help to grow him. Well, in Christmas break, in that same Christmas campaign, a man from a nearby village of Lulumbela was converted. That's this man. And the following May, Youssef goes and finds him, helps him to start a congregation in his home. That man's name is Amos, and he's currently the preacher at the Lulumbela congregation. This is their church building, and that's Amos. Well, also in that same Christmas break campaign, a family from Kazibizio, the village of Kazibizio, was converted. And then that May, Youssef helped them also start a congregation in their home with only six people. And now today, this is their building and their congregation. Then in August 12th of that following year, 2007, Pascal passed away suddenly. Just over a year after sharing some tracts with this family and watching four congregations sprout up and dozens of Christians over the course of that little over a year. Then in October, Cy sent another team for another seminar with good results. The headmaster at the Ibambula Primary School was a Christian, and he allowed the church to use the school for that seminar. And at that seminar, 40 souls were baptized in this little pit. Not all at the same time. They would not have fit. But, you know, one after another, they were baptized. And the first one was this lady. Her name is Rebecca. And the church built up in that schoolhouse to about 200 members until the government clamped down on them and said, you can't meet in the schoolhouse anymore. So they began to meet in this mud building. And they met here for 6 years until it was so weather damaged that it wasn't usable anymore. And so now they are meeting in the home of this family. And because of that situation, that church has dwindled down to 60 members. They're meeting here while they wait for a building to be built of their own where they can continue to worship in a better situation. Well, that building is now being built with the help of some American supporters. And we could go on and tell of congregations in Mtinga and Bunanda, Luzewe, and Uyovo that all spun off of this one situation. But I think this is enough to illustrate how churches grow in the mission field and to see how tracts and missionaries and preaching students and native Christians and American supporters all working together each play a part in helping the church to be propagated and to spread in that area and to become much stronger than it would be if any one of those people were not playing their part. Here are the tracts that I mentioned. They're highly effective. Each tract, we're told, is read by an average of 5 different people in its lifespan. It's not uncommon at all that we'll have somebody contact us from a tract that was distributed years ago and finally has filtered its way toward them, and they want to know more information about what they're reading about. So part of the budget that I have to raise money for each year is for printing tracts and buying Bibles. That's a part of it. And Bible studies are so easy to set up. The only limiting factor is the time that you have available to do it. And so if you want to get together a group and go on a campaign there, that would be great. And you would have a wonderful experience. Now, there are some different questions that you deal with. A lot of the questions are the same, but you get some that are a little bit different. One time a gentleman asked me, "What do I do if I'm going to be baptized and I get eaten by a crocodile?" So, you know, a legitimate concern probably doesn't come up here very often. But, you know, you got to deal with those things. Sometimes you have to deal with polygamy. That's a big issue there. You have to deal with, is it okay for a Christian to drink blood? And not because they're vampires, but because the Maasai tribe, they're a staple in their diet is a beverage of blood, cow's blood, mixed with milk. I call it the Maasai protein shake. But that's a big part of their diet. You also have to deal with things like, can you beat your wife? You have to deal with that with faithful Christian men because it's culturally acceptable. I've had serious conversations with men who should be mature Christians about, no, you can't beat your wife. And they say, a brother actually said to me, yes, but what if she burns dinner? Well, I mean, in that case. No, of course not. Not even if she burns dinner, you can't do it. But these are things that you have to deal with. Another aspect of the work is in providing benevolence. As Jesus describes the day of judgment, he seems to indicate that one of the ways we'll be judged is how our faith was motivated to action by seeking to alleviate the suffering of those that we had the chance to help. And so, in Tanzania is a place that can happen. 68% of Tanzanians live on less than $1.25 per day. And because of that, 32% of the population is malnourished. The UN Human Development Index ranks Tanzania as 159th out of 187 countries on the poverty index. So it's a very, very poor nation. You know, we talk about minimum wage. That's a hot topic in a lot of areas. You know, wanting to raise minimum wage to $15 an hour. And their minimum wage for what you're going to pay for, you know, menial labor, unskilled labor, is going to be $5 per day. $5 per day, and they'll dig a ditch, clean your house, do whatever, and be glad to receive it. And being able to offer help to some people that desperately need it is one of our great joys. And so with the help of American supporters, we've been able to help offer food, clothing, shelter, school fees, and more to some of the world's neediest people. And we can see, you know, the ways that many of them live. This woman is making gravel by hand. This is the most popular child's toy we see over there. It's just a bucket lid nailed to a stick, and he'll run along and roll it, and he thinks that's really cool. And that's what the kids play with. So, you know, your kids are going to want to make note, put this on their Christmas list. They're going to love it. It's inexpensive, and it's going to be the next big thing. I'm letting you get ahead of the curve here. Sometimes campaign groups will do good about incorporating some sort of benevolence with their campaign. Like one year, one of the groups from Hoover, Alabama came and they bought 1,000 mosquito nets and distributed those as a part of what they did. And we can go on, but that gives you a taste for some of the things that are taking place. And the fourth area of the work, preacher training, evangelism, benevolence, and then edifying the church, because we're called to make disciples, right? And so that involves more than just a baptism, a pat on the back, and wish you well. But we want to help grow them on toward maturity, help them grow toward a self-support and propagation and all that sort of thing. And we're doing that in a lot of ways. With that in mind, something that is new, every mission point struggles with how to balance supporting local churches in order to help accelerate their growth, but also not create a dependency or a patriarchal type of relationship. How do you do that? And you know, we're no different. But here's something that we're trying to do, is with some of the guys that are supported, some of the evangelists, not all the evangelists, but some of them receive support from America. Well, when that happens, there's a lack of accountability to the local congregation for that guy. I mean, it's okay, but it has these limitations. And sometimes maybe they're not as motivated as they ought to be to grow that church. Maybe they don't feel the accountability to that congregation that they ought to. And the worst part is that congregation never learns the expectation that we are supposed to be supporting our preacher. They just live expecting that it's the job of somebody, unseen people across the seas, to support our preacher. And so we're doing two things now to try to address that problem and help the church grow toward maturity. One is no longer, for most of them anyway, no longer is the support going to go directly to the preacher. Now, starting this month, actually, support is being given to the congregation, to the local congregation, so that they then can use that support to support their preacher. And so it's just kind of relabeling, but it changes the direction of funds. So now it's going to the church. The church, you're supposed to be supporting your preacher. Here's money to do it, but you do it. He's accountable to them. He leaves. They still have the funds to support another preacher to work with them. And then as a follow-up to that, that support is reducing by 10% each year for 10 years until it's gone. So it slowly shifts the burden of support onto the shoulders of those local congregations. And then when that money's saved, you reduce all these guys 10% next year, what happens to all those funds? Well, that becomes a new church plant grant that we can give to one of our graduates to go out and start the same kind of deal. So it establishes a system where you've got a rolling system of churches being weaned off of support, so they're standing on their own, and new churches being established each year. And I'm excited to see how that's going to play out. Don't expect it to be perfect. There'll be hiccups along the way, like there is with anything, but hopefully I can stand up here again next year and tell you that's been a wildly successful experiment, and tell about good things that are coming from that. Well, other ways that we're supporting the churches there, we have these Bible schools, the Kilimanjaro Bible School and the Arusha Bible School. These are kind of a night school format. They're different from the school of preaching. The school of preaching is for faithful men that want to be preachers. The Bible schools are for anybody. It can be for new converts. It can be for area people that just want to know more about the Bible, and that's a great evangelistic tool. Sometimes we even have denominational preachers that come and want to learn the Bible from us, and we're very happy to teach them the Bible, and a lot of times they wind up being converted as a result of that. We also host here at the School of Preaching an event called the Tanzania Leadership Conference. This is a big deal for us. It's a a lectureship, basically, where church leaders are going to come from all over East Africa and converge on our little school. And we had the chance to catch up with some alumni and see, you know, what's going on with the church. We also host a couple of camps at the School of Preaching. We have Tanzania Christian Camp, which is modeled pretty much after the way American Bible camps tend to work, except it's hosted there at the school. And then the following week, we'll have Future Preacher Training Camp hosted at the school. And both of those will be for children ages 13 on up into about 23 or 24, because in Tanzania, you're not considered a full-grown adult until you're 30 years old. And so that's a different mindset, but it's one that is a part of the culture there. Here is my beautiful daughter, Abby, with the project that you all helped her do. So I wanted to make sure that you saw what was going on here. With your help, she was able to put together 15 200-page binders full of teaching material that the churches could use there in teaching their children about the Bible. And there were school supplies that went along with that, and that was a great blessing. She went around to these congregations as we were visiting them, and she would demonstrate how to use the material, teaching the children, teaching the teachers, teaching them songs and all sorts of things, which was new for a lot of them. There were some of them that it hadn't really occurred to them they needed to be teaching the children. And so they had to be taught, you know, it would be a good idea to do that. Here's some benefits to that. There's some that were teaching the children, but they didn't have any resources. One lady actually said to Abby, "I have been desperately searching for aids for my Bible class, and God has answered my prayers." You all helped answer those prayers, and we're very proud of that. Preaching in several local congregations, getting around to as many of them as possible. They long to be connected to the brotherhood at large, and so they love when we visit. Sometimes it's for an extended series. Sometimes it's just for a special seminar. Sometimes they ask us to come in and deal with a particular controversy that's brewing in their area. Sometimes it's more of a friendly visit and connection. On this last trip, one brother literally said to me that it was his dream come true that we had visited his congregation. It wasn't any big thing to us, but it meant a lot to them to be remembered, to be thought about, to be connected with the brotherhood at large. All right, so there's ladies' seminars, children's Bible classes. So what's the mission? It's edification, it's benevolence, it's evangelism, and it's preacher training. And that's what we're trying to do. There's some places that you can follow online. Now, how can you help? The number one way you can help, now somebody says, "I really appreciate what you're doing. I believe in the importance of mission, but I am on a very fixed income. I cannot help financially." That's okay. I really, really get that, because our number one need is prayer. And despite what some televangelists on TV tells you, you don't need, prayer doesn't cost anything, right? It's totally free. Matter of fact, you don't even have to be healthy to pray. I've done some of my most fervent praying when very unhealthy. I bet some of you have too. As long as you have some lucidity of mind about you, you can lay there on your sick bed and you can pray. And you can pray not only for your health, but you can pray for mission work across the globe, including Tanzania. And that makes a difference. Prayer is important and it's powerful and it's meaningful. So I want to ask everybody in here, be praying for our work and the work of others as well. But be people that are praying about kingdom matters. Jesus teaches us to pray about kingdom matters, right? We don't usually have to be told to pray for what we need. We remember that if we're prayer-believing people. We need to remember to pray for matters of the kingdom as well, God's interest on earth. And we do also need financial contributions. The work in size absence, there was a couple years there where nobody was filling that role as the face of the work. Nobody was actively raising funds, and the work suffered tremendously, and we still haven't recovered from that. We still have not built the budget back up to the finances back up to where we're meeting the budget. So we need help. And, you know, it could be that somebody says, hey, I want to just sponsor a preaching student. It costs us $300 a month to train a guy for 2 years. And maybe somebody says, hey, I just want to take care of that or part of that. Maybe you can't do that. I couldn't do that. But maybe you can give $10 or $15. And I still love that. Even if you said, hey, I'm going to give $120, I'd rather you give it $10 a month than all at once. And we'll take the one-time donations. They're helpful. But the monthly donations mean so much because they build a relationship. They connect you with what's going on. And you remember when I said our number one need was? It's prayer. If you're giving on a regular basis, you know what I bet you're also doing? You're also remembering to pray because you've got some skin in the game and you're invested in it. The way, the best way I know to think about this, I'm a big, big football fan. And we used to live in Alabama. There I knew a good brother who was a serious Alabama football fan. You could tell because he was always wearing Alabama clothing. You know, Alabama fans don't tend to keep that a secret and display it. And so he was wearing Alabama shirts and hats, and he talked about Alabama football and did all these things. And he had a daughter, and she grew up as daughters are wont to do. And you know what that daughter did? You know, sometimes you try the best you can with kids, and they grow up, and they have a mind of their own. That daughter, she grew up, and she went to school at Auburn. Can you believe it? That is Alabama's number one rival. She went to school at Auburn. And the next thing you know, I saw that good brother. And do you know what he had on? He was wearing an Auburn shirt. The brother had gone apostate. And what happened was his daughter had gone to Auburn, his tuition money had gone to Auburn, his treasure was at Auburn, and Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You want to remember to pray for the kingdom the way you need to? Make sure you've got your treasure invested in the kingdom. And that'll help you remember. So it's good for people to be giving, invested in these things. I want you invested in Tanzania, but if it's not Tanzania, be invested in the church work, of course, locally. But also, if you can, be involved in some other type of work, whether it be a mission work or whatever, but be giving toward the needs of the kingdom as much as you can and be praying for the needs of the kingdom. So with that in mind, I have this high-tech sign-up device. Now, I'm going to have it with me tonight. If you sign up here, it does not obligate you to anything financially. It has a special stylus that it serves as the input device on it, and you can make marks. But if you'll give me your name and address, I'll add you to our email report list. I send out an email report every few weeks so you can know what's going on in the work there so that you can pray about those things. And so if you'd like to be, if you're interested in that, you want to receive that, let me know and I'll be happy to add you to that list. And then another way that you can help maybe beyond those things is referrals. Maybe you're uncle, your dad, your neighbor, somebody is an elder, a missions deacon or something at another congregation, you can contact them and say, listen, our church supports this work in Tanzania that I think it'd be good if you heard about it. And you put them in contact with me, and that can go a long way because having personal referrals means so much more than cold calling congregations. That's a way that you can help this work. Now, not everybody can go to foreign fields, and that's okay. It's not expected of everybody, but everybody can be partners and participants in the work even without leaving home. And you as supporters are just as much an important part of this work as we are, as the guys there are, because it's all part of that chain that God describes in Romans chapter 10, verses 14 and 15. He says, "How then shall they call on Him of whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in Him of whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach unless they are sent?" That means this chain of events that culminates with somebody becoming a believer, a child of God, having a home in heaven, begins with somebody caring enough to send someone with the gospel. That's all part of it. And that's a vital role that you all play. Let's each be determined to do our part. Mr. Spurgeon one time said so eloquently, "If sinners be damned, at least let them leap to hell over our bodies. If they will perish, let them perish with our arms about their knees. Let no one go there unwarned and unprayed for." Let's have that heart for lost souls, that if they're going to be lost, it's not going to be because we didn't do what we could to warn them. We weren't concerned about the lost ourselves. And maybe there's somebody here tonight that somebody's been praying for you, somebody's been encouraging you, and you know that you need to do something to make your life right. Maybe you're ready to, as a penitent believer, come and be baptized into Christ so that your sins will be washed away. Or maybe you've already done that, but since then you haven't been the Christian you set out to be on that day you were baptized. And you let sin come back into your life, and you're sorry about that, and you want to rededicate yourself to overcoming that and being the Christian that you know you ought to be and that you want to be. If we can help in any of these ways, then I hope you'll come forward and let your need be known while together we stand and sing.